material.
I got the Jeopardy theme playing in my head. Hey! And now we're live. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in. This is Mike Laffey, the BAMF Podcast. I'm here with Nick Garber from Apogee Comics. How are you doing, Nick?
Good. How are you guys doing?
All right, all right. And also Walt Rebilliard from Hazard Studios. How are you doing, Walt?
Not bad. I have my co-pilot here tugging at my leg. It's very annoying, but I'll try not to get yanked out of the chair.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on you then. We're here today to talk about Iron Fist on Netflix. So I guess real fast, we'll start with Nick. You're to my left. How do you feel about the show?
I like this season. I've been becoming more of a fan of the MCU Netflix version of Iron Fist. Obviously not the first season of Iron Fist. I thought that was not the best portrayal, but like in Defenders, Danny and Iron Fist, you know, he kind of came into his own. It looked like he was more comfortable in the role. He wasn't such a whiner. And then when we see him pop up in Luke Cage, you know, the character has advanced even further and I'm starting to like him, you know? So, and then I saw the trailer for season two of Iron Fist and I was like, wow, the choreography looks really good this time. So yeah, I'm in. And then Typhoid Mary was going to be in it. So I was like, okay, I'll check that out. I thought, what was it? Was it 10 episodes or 13 episodes?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Was it 13?
Looking right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the technology.
I don't know. The problem that this season was having is kind of like with some of the other later Netflix Marvel shows is that you don't need that many episodes. I don't think you do. The first two Daredevils definitely, I mean, I couldn't get enough. It could have been 22 episodes and I would have been good. Because it just didn't seem like filler. You know, it was all advancing towards something. But with Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, the Defenders, even that one, it all felt like there was a couple episodes that they could have just pulled out because they really didn't do anything other than just fill up time for 52 minutes.
Yeah, as we were talking before the podcast started, it seems like that's kind of a thing, right? I mean, a lot of these streaming shows, they seem like they, you know, get told you got to fill this many hours. So, with Iron Fist and especially this season of Iron Fist and last season of Luke Cage, I enjoyed both of them, but there were times I was like, God damn, we could just hit the fast forward button and, you know, all the Rand family drama, you can just cut that out, make it into a, you know, it's a separate show about rich people in New York and I can skip
right.
And be a happy dude. So yeah. I think as I mentioned before, my big takeaway, I agreed with this review I read the other day that said most of the cool stuff that happened in that show happened in the last two episodes. But yeah, it's good to see them doing like martial arts. You can not cringe. I felt kind of weird about them. I mean, I've been reading Iron Fist for a while and there's a whole history of other Iron Fists and different people wielding it. It feels kind of weird to like to have the titular character give his superpower to somebody else. I understand why they did it. But of course, at the end, he gets, spoiler alert, he's got the Iron Fist gun from Orson Randall. So I mean, that's kind of a cool thing. I don't know. What did you guys think about that? What did you think, Walt?
Going into the martial arts part, because, you know, that's where I usually hang my hat. They have the one shining part from the first series was Colleen Wing, right? So she's got this multicultural heritage, but she identifies more with one side of the heritage than the other, and that was the Japanese side. In doing so, her martial arts were formatted that way. Japanese jujutsu and old school Japanese kempo, they strike to distract and off balance before they throw down. Because after you would throw somebody down in the old school systems, you didn't just like punch or teabag somebody. You would take out a knife or a firearm, and you'd shoot them on the ground. You know, or you'd wrestle them to remove their weapons and then kill them with their own weapons. And that continued into this season. Colleen, when she fights, it has that Japanese feel where she strikes to distract and then throws somebody to the ground, which can either make them have a hard time dealing with her as she deals with a new threat or for whatever reason. The big improvement, I think, was Iron Fist's actual martial arts. It looks like he got much more training, and they used stunt doubles a little more prodigiously than they did last time. The only thing, The only thing I'm kind of disappointed at is this guy is supposed to be a master of kung fu, right? So very Chinese flavor, very whirling and acrobatic in some places, and very direct and almost ballistic in others. And you get a little bit of the ballistic, but you never get that whirling, like Hungar kung fu, where they have these big, long, powerful stances, or like Walom kung fu, which is praying mantis kung fu, where they're they're using animal strikes to activate nerves. You know, there was like a mention of it when his buddy Davos did that whole five finger death touch thing. You know,
oh yeah.
But I mean, you know, but I'm gonna definitely go on Nick's side as far as he looked a lot more comfortable in the role. You know, I don't think he either had enough research or had enough time to prepare for this role in the first season. And to do as well as he did probably speaks to his level as an actor. But this season, he seemed much more comfortable as Danny Rand. He seemed much more comfortable as Iron Fist. He didn't mention the word Kunlun every third sentence, which was nice. So, I mean, yeah, definite improvement from the last season.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Is it weird that Colleen's the Iron Fist now and Danny's not?
Well, they're both the Iron Fist now.
Well, yeah.
I think it's a good thing because like right now, we have we just got the big announcement the other day of the Dark Phoenix saga is coming to the movies.
Turd. Right?
And a couple of people that I follow on social media in regards to comics, you know, they have pretty much the same evaluation of it as each other. And that's why are we doing the same storylines over and over and over again? When you have those same storylines, it just, you're not giving the comics reader anything to look forward to. I mean, we don't necessarily want a one-for-one adaptation. We want to go to the movies and be a little surprised or have something new to offer so that it feels like we're getting our money's worth rather than just rehashing the same story. If you look at the story that they're doing in Iron Fist 2, it's a story that's straight from the comics. They almost went panel for panel in some cases, you know? So to have a twist like that where he's like, nope, I'm addicted to this power, you take it. You are in a much better place to handle it than I am. You know, I think that was a neat twist because it did something that you didn't really see in the comics.
Right.
I can see that.
Because Danny's whole motivation is to be the protector of Kunlun and be the immortal Iron Fist. I mean, so yeah, it definitely was a nice little plot twist. You know, it's like, hey, I'm cool. You can have it.
And at the same time, if you look at it, his motivations for being the Iron Fist are all gone. I no longer have to beat the hand. I've done that. I no longer can protect Kunlun. It's gone. So why not give it to somebody who can use it for something positive? Because if you look at, I think it was a great connection that they built all throughout the episodes. Because the whole time she's like, this is my neighborhood. You know, I'm working in this pro bono group to help my neighborhood. I'm helping these kids because they're in my neighborhood. I'm helping fight this threat because it's in my neighborhood. So to have this power to be able to service that, you know, it was a really logical step for the show.
Okay, cool. That's reasonable. I can see that. And it was so they leave with the guns at the end. That was cool, right? But I kind of wanted it to be cooler. How'd you guys feel about that? Well, I mean, because he, you know, someone pulls a gun on him, and you know, and he pulls out his guns and magically shoots their bullet down. I kind of wanted some gun foo there.
Oh my god, like some, Equilibrium.
Yeah, gun kata.
Yeah, I wanted some badass Matrix jumping off walls, and you know, some John Wick style, you know, gunplay. And it was more like just 5 seconds of, hey, Danny Rand's a gun guy now, which isn't a bad thing. But I was kind of wanting to see, you know, sell me on it, show me some cool shit. But I guess that's season 3.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go guns, bring in Frank Castle too.
That would be an interesting team up.
He's getting a second season. Hell yeah.
Oh, there's no way. I really liked Punisher. Some of the torture scenes I thought went on way longer than they needed to, but I was really
into guys it. Like me and Walter, like, you know what? I can stand to watch a bit more.
And I thought it was the best Tom Waits music video, you know, in a while there in episode one. But yeah. So you guys didn't mind that bit at the end with the priest from Soprano who just kept cutting on him for what seemed like half the episode. You guys were into that?
I wouldn't say into it because that sounds like a sexual connotation. But
right, fair enough.
Okay, yeah, I was into it that way. No, I'm just kidding. Or was I? I don't know. No, I mean, it's just situations similar to that do happen. And it, I think it was meant to really illustrate the brutality of Punisher's world.
As well as how much damage he's willing to take.
Right. I mean, the guy's a machine. You know, he's laser focused. He's hyper driven. He is everything that an operator is or is supposed to be. You know, no matter how much pain he's willing to go through, any amount of pain up to including death, and come back from it, you know, as long as he completes his mission. So, you know, there's a lot of guys in that world that are like that. So most of them. But we got Daredevil season 3 coming up too next month. Right,
yeah, that is. There's been a trailer for that. You guys seen that? How's it look?
Looks pretty sick.
Yeah. He's going back to the black on black. So I'm kind of curious to see why he goes back to that. Why he's going back to basics type deal. And he's talking about killing fools. You know, he's that line in the teaser. He's like, I'd rather die as the devil than live another day as Matt Murdock. And I was like, oh, shit. I mean, because it sounds a lot like the...
Is that the story when he got outed?
Yeah. And a little bit of Frank Miller's run, the Man Without Fear. You know, because the first season or two kind of had a little bit of Guardian Devil going on in there. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm a huge Daredevil fan. You know, that's what brought me into comic books to begin with. So I'm like anything that they film that's Daredevil related, I'm in. Even that piece of shit Ben Affleck movie.
But as far as the Netflix series goes, I think one of the big draws to that and why Daredevil's been so successful, especially out of all the other shows, is the supporting cast is always fantastic. They always do such a good job with his supporting cast. You know? Yeah.
You know, I would say Vincent D'Onofrio might be the best thing about Daredevil. I mean, I like everything else, but he's a really good Wilson Fisk.
He is. And, you know, according to, you know, the teaser, he's going to have that white jacket back on. And, you know, he's going to start playing more into that, you know, kingpin role.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, like Walt said, the supporting cast is amazing. I mean, Foggy's great. They couldn't have picked a better Foggy.
Yeah, he's good.
You know, Karen Page is great. I even liked what they did in the first season with Ben Ulrich.
But how about in the second season, they bring in the Punisher and the way they portrayed him, that those rooftop scenes, glued to my set, you know?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, nothing was going on in my house. It could have been on fire, and I'm like, shh. Just
because it illustrated two people who were in so much pain and who could have supported each other, but they just couldn't get around to seeing each other's point of view, and that's what kept them apart and kept them at odds. And I thought that was amazing. They did such a good job of playing them off of each other. It was really well done. So I think Daredevil, as far as that goes, has amazing in their ability to pit the cast against one another and in support of one another. Yeah. Fantastic job.
You know, back in June, Stephen DeKnight, the guy who runs the show on Netflix, Daredevil being the show, said he really wants to do a Moon Knight series.
Oh, yes!
I would love a Moon Knight series. Because that gives you a little bit of Batman, it gives you a little bit of Punisher, it gives you a little bit of Daredevil, gives you a little bit of Doctor Strange. I mean, it's got a whole lot of cool elements to it that they merged together in Mark Spector.
Yeah, I would agree. I gotta tell you, as an ongoing comic, some months or some... creative, I guess it's anyone. Some creative teams, you love it, and sometimes you're like, I don't know, what the hell. Lately, I've sometimes been loving it and hating it in the same issue. Like last month, some cult was running him through tests to see if he wanted to join, and, you know, of course, he was just faking him out, but there was a scene in the first three pages where he had to fight a rabid dolphin.
Oh, wow.
It's the stupidest goddamn thing, but I was just so amused by that. I was like, all right, I'm cool with whatever happened. I mean, the rest of the book wasn't fantastic, but in the first page, he's fighting a raft. And then you don't ever see it on screen. It's just he's squaring off against the dolphin, and the next one, there's just, like, you know, bloody chum in the water. And
Sometimes you got to whoop a dolphin's ass. I don't know.
Well, it was a rabid dolphin, so you know it was for the greater good.
Like, how do you get dolphin rabies?
That's an issue of Deadpool, man. I don't know. I'm sure there's
that would be the book to explore that.
Yeah. So sounds like you guys have seen the Dark Phoenix trailer. Is this a good thing? Is this a big question mark?
I don't know.
Give it back. Just scrap the goddamn movie and let Marvel handle it, please. Just have them reboot the whole X universe. I mean, I like some of the elements of the new class or first class movies, but holy shit, they're gonna screw the pooch on this one, just like they did with Apocalypse.
My favorite part of those movies is Magneto.
Magneto is great.
That actor does a fantastic job.
Oh, Michael Fassbender is just amazing.
Yeah, I think the X-Men, the whole franchise has been kind of wildly uneven. I mean, there's been some really cool shit, and then there's been, like you say, movies like Apocalypse.
Well, I had high hopes when First Class came out, and it was just enough of a twist or a unique take on it to make me a fan again, because it wasn't Bryan Singer. I think it was, Matthew Vaughn who directed those. I liked, even though it wasn't the true First Class, I was okay with the characters that they used. I liked the story. I liked everything about it. And then it was this huge success, you know, and they're like, well, shit, this is a huge success. Let's give it back to Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
Why? Why give it back to him? He had his shot. Let him move on, you know, and then it just kept getting worse. You know, it was like, okay, we're going to do these period pieces now. You know, Apocalypse is in the 80s. Dark Phoenix is in the 90s. It's like, no, there's other plot lines you could use before we get to Dark Phoenix.
But, you know, I would probably go see it just in the hopes that there's a Quicksilver scene.
Yeah. Well, and he's in the trailer, so
that'd be a good thing. Did you guys see that? Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, but I mean, you're missing the best part of all those series. You're missing the Shi'ar.
Yeah. Do they have the rights for the Shi'ar with the? Although I guess it's all back under Disney now, right?
Yeah. So, but I mean, still, how are you going to do a Dark Phoenix thing? What are you just going to have her have split personalities too? I mean, so
we're not going to talk about the Phoenix Force. We're not going to bring in the Star Jammers. We're not doing any of that, huh?
Yeah. She's just. I have this dark side of my personality, and when I get pissed, I get fiery because I'm a redhead. I mean,
1 second, please, before I choke my kids out on this podcast. Hold on.
The Banff podcast does not endorse child choking as a general principle.
Unless you are training in martial arts, in which case child choking is approved and oftentimes encouraged.
Yeah, I can see that. Depending on the martial art, I tried to take a jiu-jitsu class as well, but they said I was a Gentile, so I couldn't. But sorry. That's awful. I don't know why I made that joke.
Did you really try to take jiu-jitsu classes?
No, but I'm thinking about taking them with my kid.
Oh, do it. It's so much fun. I
want to get him into something. I just met my wife's, you know, we've had some problems with him picking fights at school, and she's like, we don't want to give him skills so he's better at that. And I'm like, well, this will, you know, discipline and channel those urges. And so it's an ongoing debate.
Plus, any instructor's worth of salt is going to explain that, hey, the time and place for that is on the mat or if somebody's being mean to you. So, I mean,
yeah, and I mean, it's not like we're going to go to the studio from, you know, the first 20 minutes of Karate Kid. So it's,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. There is no pain. There's no fear in this dojo.
Yeah. So there was a new scene from Venom they put online like the last day or two. You guys seen that?
Which one? The one where he tears apart the anti-Venom or whoever he's supposed to be?
Yeah. He comes out of the elevator and he's holding his hands up and he's like, don't make me do this. And of course they don't listen. And so then he symbiotes out and takes out the whole room.
Yeah.
You're not feeling it?
Okay. I don't know. The parts where he's as Venom, mm-hmm. you know, I think are hysterical, like lungs, pancreas, liver, all tasty morsels in one package. I'm like, yeah. And apparently he does bite a dude's head off in the movie. Oh, but okay. There's no mention of Spider-Man, from what I understand. There's no all the interviews I've seen, you know, there's no Spider-Man symbol on him. He gets the symbiote from a lab. I hear they've even done some reshoots so that instead of everybody going, yes, he has the symbiote, you know, they're saying it correctly. Nick, I think you might either be muted or there might be.
I am muted. Sorry.
Aha, you're back.
Because there was mayhem at the house because the Corvid and Sparrow figure showed up.
Nice. How they look?
I'm opening them up right now while we're talking.
Live reveal, ladies and gentlemen.
Live reveal, unboxing, everybody. Yeah. Well, I mean, I got most of my flagship characters made now, so.
So what did you think about the Venom trailer?
The first two ones I liked. I haven't seen the one where he goes after the anti-Venom. I'm still kind of skeptical. I mean, it looks cool. Venom looks good. I think Tom Hardy's going to do a good job, but how are you going to pull this together when you don't have Spider-Man? Because
yeah.
Like Venom only exists because there was Spider-Man and that whole in the Secret Wars and all that, you know.
All right, hear me out. I had a thought. Is the anti-hero Venom we've had for the last few years effectively a different character than the old villain Venom?
Could be.
Yeah, it's possible. They're kind of going with this movie. It looks like they're going off of the Lethal Protector storyline, which is where they got tired of using Venom as a true villain and started using him as an anti-hero, kind of like a Punisher and stuff like that. So new town, you know, new motivations, all that kind of stuff.
Right on.
Yeah, I mean, hell, he's been a guest star in the Guardians of the Galaxy in the last couple of years.
Yeah. You know, and if you're going to do Venom, I mean, then associate with Spider-Man so you can pave the way to have that, you know, as Flash Thompson becomes Agent Venom. You know, you can do those things.
Oh, I would pay so much money to see that.
Oh, yeah. It's like, shut up and take my money and all my Apogee Universe toys that I've had made. Just take them all now.
Hey, before we get too far away from Netflix, you guys watched Maniac yet?
No, it's on my queue list. I'm a little late to the party on Sons of Anarchy, so I've been watching that.
Right. That's really good. That's really good. And there's a new sequel to that out now.
Mayans, yeah. Fellow Army Ranger and former Border Patrol agent Vincent Rocco Vargas is one of the characters on that show.
No kidding.
Yeah. Former 275 guy making good. He came from that whole Article 15.
Oh, yeah.
Letzlinger Whiskey crew with Matt Best and all those guys. So, oh, yeah.
Looks yeah, those great. Guys are all out of 275. Hey, look at that.
Yeah.
What we got there? Oh. Oh, eight. I'll be really quiet so you can show that off there, Nick. Hang on.
Hold on. I have to pose them now because they're just standing all stiff. And she came with an interchangeable head with the helmet off, a bucket off one. So this is Corvid. Her Kickstarter won't be till, well, December, I think. So got to save up money so I can pay the artist.
You got Sparrow?
Yep. I'm packing her right now. Actually, she looks pretty legit too. Wow, they even did the braid. That long-ass braid of hers. There we go.
So oh, twisted. Nice.
I am pleasantly surprised.
So is that swag from the Kickstarter?
No, this is for my personal geek collection. other characters that I've had made recently, which I probably will offer for the Kickstarter, because I got my intergalactic cosmic hero, Solarian Prime, who I also had made.
Love the hair.
Oh, yeah. I had to give him that, like, quaff. And then his villain, General Grexis.
Oh, he looks twisted.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you the original art, man. I'm having so much fun redesigning some of these characters that I've sat in sketchbooks for, like, the last 10, 15 years, you know, and just going ham with them. Been great.
That's fantastic.
Well, hey, since we're talking about Apogee, you've got Kickstarter news, right? A couple different
things. I do. Okay. For those of you that follow the Apogee universe on Kickstarter, I just posted an update today about the Phantom Hawk. We had some delays. I know I was supposed to be shipping the book out this month, but my artist, you know, Igor, lives in the Philippines and they got hit by a typhoon. So that kind of slowed down production a little bit. So we only got 3 pages left to be drawn. The artwork is amazing. It's definitely worth the wait. And then DC Alonso, who is the colorist, has been doing a phenomenal job catching up because it seemed like everybody had like these catastrophic life-changing events happen in the last couple of months, you know, while we were rocking and rolling. Like DC had a kid, not like he didn't know it was coming. It wasn't a surprise or anything. It was just like, okay, I have this kid and I didn't realize how much of my time it was going to eat up. And I'm like, yeah, well, welcome to parenthood. So.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. It eats up your time. So he's catching up on that. He's just about done. So that I'm anticipating getting this book printed out in the next week or two. And then I'll be shipping out rewards. So that's the only thing I've been waiting. Although all the other rewards have been made, they're sitting here collecting dust. You know, I'm just waiting on the book so I can start shipping the stuff out. Then with the Crimson Guardian, I got about 10 more orders I got to throw out there. Most of them are the international ones. And I had to do some sketch cards and stuff. So those will be coming here in the next week or so. And then the last bit of Kickstarter news is for those of you who've been patiently waiting for issue 2 of Bengali, that Kickstarter will go live October 3rd. And that turnaround should be a lot quicker because it's already been colored. It's already been lettered. It's just sitting there and we just need the money to produce it and get it set, you know? And so,
go ahead.
I'll probably offer the mask one more time. I don't know. This bad guy, I'll offer this as a reward. Obviously, it'll be a high tier for those that missed out on it the first
Bengali
time.
Bengali mask.
The Bengali mask. The mask of the Bengali.
And so we'll definitely have you on the podcast talking about that in the next week or so when that goes live.
Would love to.
Has Walter already talked you into doing an RPG version of your universe?
Yes, we have discussed it, and there's been some emails. I don't know if you got an email from a certain person that we share a friendship with. I don't know if you're CC'd on that.
Nope.
About an RPG.
I know he's doing his own.
Okay. We'll talk later.
Gotcha.
Big announcement December 1st, though. I'll just put it out there right now. December 1st, big announcement.
All right, cool. Sounds good. Anything else we want to cover before we wrap things up?
I love this show.
That's a given.
Yeah. So, hey, go ahead. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, originally we had talked about possibly doing some GM talk about writing fantastic action scenes that don't include combat.
Maybe we could save that for, you know, save that for next time, maybe.
That's what I was going to say. We should probably table that for next time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And then get Nick on here too, so that he can talk story beats of an action scene, like a chase scene, or like a building on fire scene where you're not fighting. Yeah, you're not fighting a person. You're fighting
elements. Basically
fighting time and elements. So we should get him on to do that, and then get a couple of RPG guys and bounce back and forth to see differences and similarities.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I gotta say, one of my best favorite issues of the Hawkeye run a couple years back was when he was just dealing with a flood and in his neighborhood in New York. Just talking.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was all right. Well, hey, just one last. I'll probably forget this and never mention it again if I don't say it now. But Maniac on Netflix. I really enjoyed it. It's probably two episodes too long for what it's got. But you guys remember the Grant Morrison run on JLA where the key had them all strapped in, you know, beds and the JLA space station. He's trying to use their dream energy to do something.
Yeah. They were all in kind of like a VR type deal.
Yeah. This plot felt a lot like that, where some of their dreams are bleeding into each other's dreams and, you know, different plot lines. Like, you know, in the VR, it starts off, there are a couple of blue collar grifters trying to smuggle a lemur. And then in the next one, the 1930s con artists trying to, they go to a seance at this rich lady's house and they're trying to steal this valuable. She has the last chapter, secret chapter of Don Quixote, which is supposed to have magical properties. So it's, 1930s con artists with a lot of style. And the next one, Jonah Hill is a small-time East Coast gangster, and who's the female in that one?
Emma Stone.
Yeah, Emma Stone. She's an elven warrior in a fantasy world.
What? I'm in.
Yeah, and at the conclusion of that arc, Jonah looks to his wife in the gangster world and says, "It's been great having this life with you. I love our seven kids, but I can't stay here with you anymore.
I gotta peace out.
You gotta go?
No. That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
I like the seven kids, but it's time to peace out.
He turns into a hawk and flies into Emma Stone elf fantasy dream.
Holy shit. This sounds so ridiculous. I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of crazy shit. And like I said, they could cut out at least two episodes of stuff I thought was more filler. But I would give it a recommendation. I thought it was a lot of fun, even with some of the stuff I fast forwarded through.
I'll start watching that tonight then.
All right, cool. Any other comments, thoughts before we wrap things up?
Yes, I love this show.
I'll send you $5 later, Nick. Thank you.
No, I have nothing else to say. Love being on here, as always.
What we need to do is fabricate a Banff podcast Velcro vinyl and get that so Nick can wear it on his hat.
We should probably do all kinds of swag. We got enough people who go to cons, you know, here on the show. We should have at least.
You got enough graphic designers on here too. Just saying. Yeah.
We should have T-shirts or coffee mugs or monokinis or something. I don't know.
Maybe I just start throwing ads with the link into my comic books. I don't know, something like that.
We can talk. We can talk. All right, guys, let's wrap it up. I got to get the kid to swim lessons. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks to Nick. Thanks to Walt for joining us.
Cheers.
And we'll catch everyone next time on the Banff Podcast.